Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. Let's get cracking and talk about the biggest news of the week, which was the announcement of the pricing and upcoming programming for Paramount Plus, the new Viacom CBS streaming service. So for those of you who maybe didn't even know that this existed until you saw Snooki climbing a mountain in the Super Bowl commercials or Patrick Stewart dancing on top of a mountain to classical music with James Corden, all of which is a real thing that happened in an actual Super Bowl commercial, Paramount Plus is the rebranding of CBS All Access, which was Viacom CBS's streaming service. And basically, CBS All Access was a streaming service that had like all of CBS's current shows, some back catalog of some stuff, some live sports, and then a few original series like The Good Fight, which was the sequel series or spinoff series, I'm not sure which because I never watched it, of The Good Wife, and a few others that didn't get anywhere near the kind of attention that The Good Fight did. And basically, I'm assuming this service kind of never really went anywhere, so CBS and Viacom are rebranding, restructuring, and re-releasing all of that content and a whole lot more, and they're going to call it Paramount Plus. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more later because it launches on March 4th, which is this Thursday. So I'll talk about some of the shows that they're launching with later in the episode during the premiere and finale section. But the biggest news this week was the exact pricing structure and availability of some shows that CBS Viacom both currently owns and that they are working on for the future. So to get Paramount Plus, there are two different tiers. The first, which is ad-supported, is $4.99 a month. And the second, which is not ad-supported and comes with additional benefits, like I think it has more live sports from what I understand, is $9.99 a month. So they're kind of combining like the Hulu pricing structure where you can pay to get it but still have to watch commercials, which is the most annoying thing about basic Hulu. But then they're also giving you the option of, well, if you don't want to watch commercials, you can just pay us more money, which is super annoying. The pricing isn't terrible for the basic ad-supported version. It's actually cheaper than Hulu, which is $5.99 a month. It's cheaper than Disney Plus, which is $6.99 a month, but does not contain ads. It's, I believe, the same price as Apple TV, but Apple TV, as far as I have read and from the very few that I know who have it, have said to me, it only has originals. They don't have a library of like back catalog things. So the pricing structure isn't so much the problem. It's the fact that it exists in the first place that is starting to really piss me off. So I know that we're living in an age where probably the majority of people are now streaming TV more than they are watching TV. And a lot of people are cutting cable. So in order to keep their product profitable, a lot of companies are starting their own streaming services and, you know, basically giving people the option to go a la carte for a lot of these things. And that can be nice if you are a cord cutter. But for someone like me, I'm just not going to get rid of cable. I'm just not going to do it. First of all, it is so expensive, at least where I am from in New Jersey, to only have internet and Wi-Fi through any internet or Wi-Fi provider. They basically give you cable at some point, and like they make it worth your while to bundle and to get cable and internet and Wi-Fi. So for that, I'm probably just always going to have cable. Now, I also have a lot of services, but I, like most people my age and younger, don't pay for all of them myself. You know, we share passwords and accounts with all of our friends. But if you are someone who is maybe cutting cable and then paying for all these services yourself, you're going to be paying, I think it's now $15 a month for Netflix, $15 a month for HBO and or HBO Max. It's at the minimum $6 a month if you get ads for Hulu, $7 a month for Disney Plus, $5 a month for Apple TV. I also get WoW Presents Plus because I need to watch my Drag Race UK. So that's $4 a month. And I mean, like, you keep adding on for these services. I have Frndly TV because I don't have a DVR, and it's cheaper to get the streaming service of Frndly TV so that I can record Hallmark movies, especially around Christmas. That is, I think, $7 a month. So if you add up all these streaming services, you're not saving money by cutting the cord. And then if you add in, like, if you want some type of live sports or live TV, then you need to add in like an ESPN Plus, which you could potentially get for free if you bundle Hulu and Disney Plus. Or you need to add in, I don't like, what's the other one? The YouTube Live or Hulu Plus Live. You need to add in these Plus Live TVs. So CBS is at least cutting out the more expensive version of that. So like, whereas Hulu Live, to get live sports, I believe it's a premium price. That's not the case with Paramount Plus. You're getting that at the base level. But again, you're watching ads, and it's just another goddamn streaming service that we're going to have to add if we want to watch our favorite shows. Speaking of, those shows are not only going to be new things, which, you know, might excite some people, but also they're moving some shows that are currently on cable, like Drag Race All Stars, to Paramount Plus. Fuck that. So to watch the next season of All Stars, which this pisses me off on behalf of these queens, like, they filmed this season during the pandemic last summer. They haven't announced the cast yet, but you can Google and probably find out who it is. They announced this cast. They haven't announced a cast, but they filmed it during a pandemic. So they're going to be airing it during a pandemic, or hopefully, fingers crossed, as a pandemic is wrapping up. But like, performance spaces are still shuttered, or a lot of them are permanently closing, especially gay bars. You know, DTLA and other places in LA have started to close. I know that gay bars in New York have closed. My local gay bar in New Hope, Pennsylvania closed. There are a lot of, especially queer spaces, are permanently shuttered. Other spaces are trying to reopen safely. So not only are these queens who are on season 13 now and coming up on All Star 6 not going to be able to perform very much, now you're going to fuck them with viewership because you're putting their season behind a paywall. So either people are going to start downloading these shows illegally, or they're just not going to be watching them, because I know people are not going to be paying for a lot of these services just out of spite. So that's the one that really made me the most angry, was seeing that All Stars was moving to Paramount Plus, especially because the company that produces Drag Race and all of its spinoffs, World of Wonder, WoW, has its own streaming service that I mentioned earlier, WoW Presents Plus. And internationally, that is where you watch US Drag Race. But in America, because Viacom owns the show and also owns Paramount Plus, the rights to the show go to cable, are for VH1 right now. So they can't put it on their own freaking streaming service. How stupid is that? Ugh, anyway. So other things that are coming to Paramount Plus are a reboot of Frasier, or a revival, I guess, because it's the same cast. That's going to be coming up. They're making a whole bunch of TV series based on Paramount movies. Like, they're making a Flashdance TV show and a Fatal Attraction TV show. The Italian Job is becoming a TV show. They're also, like I mentioned in last week's episode, eyeing a revival of Criminal Minds. They're also going to be getting the last 15 seasons of that show, which, after seeing some ratings information, makes that revival make more sense, because apparently it's the most streamed. Criminal Minds is the most streamed back catalog show right now, now that The Office left Netflix. So that's going to be moving over to Paramount Plus. They have a spinoff of The Daily Show that they're going to be doing. The last season of Inside Amy Schumer, which was part of her contract at Comedy Central, was to do at least one more series. And Comedy Central was kind of like, oh yeah, you got really freaking famous before we could make this last season your contract. Do it whenever you want. That show is now moving to Paramount Plus. All of Nickelodeon is going to Paramount Plus. They're launching an Avatar Studios through Nickelodeon, which will go there, and they're going to make TV series and movies based on Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra. I mentioned last week that, I'll mention later in the episode that's coming up, that SpongeBob SquarePants is going there. They have a new SpongeBob show that is part of their launch, and the new SpongeBob movie is part of their launch. They're also making, I'm not clear if this is a movie or a TV series that's about the making of The Godfather, the movie. I believe it's a TV show. It's called The Offer. They're making a new show called Lioness, which is about a young Marine who tries to bring down a terrorist organization. Another show that's launching on Thursday with it is a new season of The Real World New York, the OG cast from the early 90s. They're coming back for a reunion. They're reviving BET's The Game. They're reviving Behind the Music. They're basically bringing back a whole lot of stuff. They're doing a new cartoon CGI version of Rugrats that's coming out. So there's a lot of stuff that is potentially coming out that will interest people. And then on top of that, they're kind of copying this HBO Max model of movies where Paramount movies are going to be premiering on Paramount Plus 1 month after their theatrical release. And then some others will be 3 months after theatrical release. So A Quiet Place 2 is supposed to be coming out in September, and it will be on Paramount Plus in October. Mission Impossible 7, whenever the hell that actually ends up coming out, will be a month to a month and a half on Paramount Plus after it's in theaters. This could potentially, it's unclear, but also include MGM movies. So there's a lot that could potentially be happening with this new streaming service. So I don't really know how to feel about this, because on the one hand, if you're going to make your own streaming service, I feel like this is a good way to do it, because they are giving you a lot of value for your $5 a month. The problem is you're paying $5 a month and you're still going to watch commercials. Like, that is so fucking annoying. But on the other hand, this is a lot of content, and paying $5 to see like new Paramount movies like A Quiet Place 2 or something, if you would rather stay home than go to the movies, that's a good deal. I don't know. I'm really torn on how I feel about this. I'm mostly really annoyed because I'm gonna have to do some serious soul searching about whether or not I'm gonna shell out the kind of money that they want. Right now, they are offering a pre-order price of 50% off if you pre-buy a year. So I'm seriously considering doing that and seeing what the output is like and just how annoying the commercials are. Because, like, I don't know if anybody has basic Hulu with ads, but if you ever have had that plan, I feel like it, I would rather not have Hulu than have ad supported Hulu. Like, I was watching earlier this year, or not earlier this year, what fucking year is it? In the fall, whenever it came out, I was watching the second season of Pen 15, and those are like 27 to 30 minute episodes, and there were like 4 or 5 1 to 2 minute commercial breaks. And for such a short show, it made every episode. First of all, shows on Hulu and premium services are not structured in the way that traditional sitcoms are, where they have traditional act breaks. So that was one of the problems, is that a lot of times if you're watching premium shows on Hulu, the ads just get thrown into the middle of a scene. Like, they'll just, like, a scene will start, and then all of a sudden your streaming service will be like, oh wait, we have to do a commercial. So, like, you'll hear one word of a sentence and it'll cut out, go to the commercials, and then come back and you've missed like 5 seconds of the show. So that's annoying. But then on top of that, like, they're not meant to be viewed this way. So there's no natural place for those ads to happen. So I am considering, because a year of Paramount Plus will only come out to $30 with ads in this pre-order price, I'm considering getting that, and I'll share with my friends, no worries. But also, it'll be kind of like an experiment. Like, I did the same thing with HBO Max this year, where if you pre-ordered it, you got $3 off a month. So I'm currently only paying $12 for HBO and HBO Max, which even if HBO Max sucks, is a great deal for HBO. It's still $3 cheaper just for HBO. And I was mad at it for a while because HBO Max launched last May, but because of the pandemic, they like didn't have most of the content they were supposed to have. It's gotten a lot better since then, especially with this Warner Brothers day and date movie deal. I did an experiment of like, you know, if I like this for a year, then, you know, I'll consider renewing at the $15 a month, which I'll probably end up doing for HBO just because HBO, I feel like, is making some of the best TV out there. And then, like I said, you know, if it's $15 a month, but if this day and date HBO Max WB movie thing, that's going to save me at least $15 for every movie that I want to see that they're releasing, which actually is quite a few. So that was the big news this week. Paramount Plus, let me know what you think, what you are planning on doing. I saw a lot of chatter on the internet that people are pissed off about it, and I totally get it. Are you pissed? Are you a fan? Are you going to jump in? Let me know. Coming up next, we're starting with the recap. Stay tuned. Let's talk about Superman and Lois, which is the newest DC Universe, Arrowverse, whatever you want to call it, show on the CW. It premiered this past week on Tuesday, and I watched it. I wanted to like it because I really liked Tyler Hoechlin and Elizabeth Tulloch when they appeared in the crossovers of the Arrowverse in past seasons. So I was looking forward to the show, but also I didn't like it. I wish I knew who this show was for, because it's okay. So it's about Superman and Lois, obviously, as we get from the title, but it's not really, it's about their children, which, like, first of all, who has ever said, you know what Superman really needs? Teenage sons, and make one of them an asshole. Who needs that? Who wants that? Who wants to see Superman as a daddy? And I don't mean in the good gay way. I mean in, like, who cares about Superman raising frickin' teenage sons? Not me. That is not why I want to watch Superman. That's not why I want to watch Superman and Lois. I don't give a shit about Superman's kids. Also, it's super confusing where these kids came from. So I was trying to remember as I was watching this premiere, and Superman and Lois, Clark and Lois, were on the crossovers for Elseworlds, I think it was, and Crisis on Infinite Earths, I want to say. Whichever one the most recent one was, I'm not entirely sure. There was, I don't remember which one it was. With the monitor and the anti-monitor, it was like 5 or 6 episodes, and they split them up, and it was also pre-pandemic, which means that it was before my brain turned to mush. Regardless, on that version, Clark and Lois were engaged and then I believe had babies, like twin babies. And then by the end of this Crisis or Elseworlds, again, whichever one it was, I can't remember. You can look it up. Sorry, I don't have time right now. Those kids became teenagers. Like, when the world went back to correct, there were things that were changed, and that was one of them. Now, that is what I recall, and from my research as I was, like, looking stuff up on my phone during commercial breaks, that is what happened pre this series. But then watching this show, first of all, Tyler Hoechlin, who plays Superman, he's great, number one. He's probably one of the better Supermans, maybe second only to Christopher Reeve, as far as I'm concerned. Regardless, he is my age. He is 33. And in this world, he is raising teenagers. Now, I know that Superman is supposed to, like, age more slowly or whatever, or something in the comic books. I don't care. So that's weird enough to see a 33-year-old man with teenage kids. But on top of that, I'm like, wait, if this is all because the world was, like, reset and things were different, does that mean that, like, it was reset and those, like, 14 years disappeared? Because then we get other people in Smallville where the series takes place, and, like, they're Clark and Lois's age, and they also have kids the age of Clark and Lois's kids. So did 14 years just disappear into the ether somewhere? I'm so confused by that. But regardless, like you don't come to a superhero show to think very much. So, take it with a grain of salt. But regardless of even all of that and how strange the setup is and how confusing it is to try to figure out how we got here, what the show actually is just not that interesting. Like I said, who gives a shit about Superman raising kids? And like we don't watch Superman for family drama, and that's exactly what Superman and Lois is. It's basically a primetime family soap opera with the lead character having superpowers. So, I mean, like we've seen hundreds and hundreds of times this storyline of teenage sons resent their father because he works too much and isn't there to spend time with them, right? Like that is not even kind of a new storyline. The only difference is that this time he's working to save the world and he's Superman. And like, okay, like that's an angle. That's definitely like a new approach to telling a Superman story, but it ain't one that I asked for. I don't know. It's boring. It's boring. And that's really the bottom line of it, is that for every, fun, ridiculous scene of Superman saving a nuclear reactor from melting down, which does happen in the first act of the pilot, we get like five scenes of Superman's angsty teenage son, Jordan, I think is the angsty one. Or maybe that's the actor's name. See, I don't even know. Playing video games and listening to rock music because that's what the rebellious teenage kids do. And oh, like it was just dull. And then they introduced Lana Lang, who on Smallville was the main female character, and this time she's played by Emmanuelle Shariki, but also they don't really introduce her. Like she's there, but they don't make it seem like she really matters to the story. Like she literally is there as a bank representative to tell Clark after his mom dies. Oh, because yeah, this is also a grief porn pilot where in the first couple of minutes we get teenage Clark's father dying, and then we get the nuclear reactor almost melting down, and then Clark loses his job at the newspaper, and then like literally minutes after he loses his job, his mom dies. Like it's so much to happen in the first like 20 minutes. Regardless, Clark has to figure out whether he wants to move back to Smallville to move into the family farm, which, oh, he can now do because remember, he lost his job. Like, oh, God. Or if he wants to sell it. And I guess Lana Lang is like the one at the bank giving him this offer. Again, like it's dramatic stakes based on banking. Who gives a shit? It's so weirdly boring. And I just don't understand how, like, such a generic family drama, domestic melodrama series that's like part Dallas, part 30 something can come out of a show about fucking Superman. Like, I'm gonna keep watching it because I always try to at least start watching the DC shows. This is a problem actually that I have with all the DC shows in general, is that this one I started out not really liking, but for most of them, I start out liking them and then like two or three seasons in, I'm done. I'm over it. I'm bored. So they tend to do shit like this where they just completely go off the rails. Unfortunately for Superman and Lois, they started there. So maybe they'll do the opposite trajectory. Maybe it'll start kind of crappy and get better. But I don't know. Like I used to watch The Flash. I loved the first season of The Flash, and I stopped watching that last year, even though I hadn't really liked it for since like maybe season 4 or 5. I stopped watching Arrow after the season with the nuclear missile. Supergirl, I've stuck with the whole time. But again, like once Jeremy Jordan left, I was much less invested because I liked his character more than I like Brainy. Legends of Tomorrow, I only watch the crossover episodes. Batwoman, I watch and I enjoy. And I especially like it this year because they've kind of rebooted the whole thing with the new Batwoman. So, like, maybe that one will end up on, again, a different trajectory than the rest. But for the most part, like, these DC shows just, I feel like they never really know what to do with their characters. They're like, okay, we have Superman. What are we going to do with him? Well, we need to come up with a new angle because it's been done to death. You know, we have the you're never going to top Christopher Reeve and the Superman movies 1 and 2, especially. We won't talk about the others. From the 70s and 80s, we had Smallville did the teen drama portion of it on the WB. We had Lois and Clark doing the romantic angle in the 90s. How do we make Superman current? You know, we have Man of Steel doing the dour, mythological, dark, sad, weepy man-baby Superman and Man of Steel, which that's the – I'm sorry. That is my least favorite, and I'm so looking forward to the new Justice League cut to see just how terribly wrong they get it. Don't at me. And the angle they came up with for Superman and Lois to kind of make it different is to make it boring. I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't want Superman dealing with the bank. I don't want Superman buying a farm. I don't want Superman raising teenage boys being like, am I a good dad? I don't care. Save the world, bitch. Save the world. That's what we want you to do. We want you to save the world. That's all I have to say about that. This week was the season 4 premiere of Floribama Shore on MTV, which if you're not watching or if you haven't watched in the past, you are seriously missing out. Like, it started pretty obviously as a way to kind of continue the Jersey Shore type of show. And I think it started after Jersey Shore ended, which makes sense. Of course, now we have Jersey Shore back. So do we need this show? In terms of entertainment value, yes. So it basically is the same premise of a bunch of people living in a house at the beach together. Only this time it's all people living in the South. And instead of being in New Jersey, they're in the panhandle in Florida along the Alabama border. But obviously this year, some shit has changed because, you know, COVID. And also I think there was a thing last year where they basically were told not to come back to the town they were in. And I forget the name of the town they were in, but I feel like I read that somewhere that they were basically like, you can't film here anymore. We don't want you, which is funny. So this year they are filming in Montana and in Arizona. So we're getting a cold weather, warm weather thing. And so far the first episode wasn't as crazy as it has been in the past. And like, guys, I'm telling you seriously, if you have never watched the show, you need to go catch up, because the fist fights, the arguments, they make the Jersey Shore cast look like the Rockefellers sometimes. Like, the shit they do is utterly insane. They get into fist fights in public with each other, with strangers. They get kicked out of everywhere they go. Nilsa kicked the window out of a police car. I mean, it's absolute insanity, and it's so entertaining in such a train wreck way. Now, so far, this first episode of this season, not nearly as entertaining. I mean, partially because they're not actually going out and doing anything, but also because it just spent a lot of time kind of catching up with everyone. So in terms of the cast, Courtney, who left early in season 3 to deal with some mental health issues, is not back. And neither is Maddie, who kind of took her place last season, which I'm okay with because she literally scared me. Like, when she got drunk and just would stare into space, she looked like she was going to murder somebody. But we get to catch up with the rest of the cast, and they're, you know, all over the country doing their thing. Gus built a house in the middle of nowhere in Perry, Florida. And we see him, like, chopping wood because, you know, he thinks he's manly and all that. And he has this really strange conversation with his younger brother, who is 19, married with a baby. And Gus tells him in so many words that he's jealous of his younger brother, that he has a wife and a baby at 19. And I'm thinking, like, this is probably me being an elitist, privileged piece of shit, and I fully own that. But I don't understand being jealous of your teenage brother for getting married and having a family at 19. it's 2021, and I feel like that doesn't really work much anymore. And on top of that, like, I think about when I was 19, like, I couldn't even decide what I wanted my major to be, let alone, like, care for the life of another human being and make decisions like buying a house and having a mortgage and shit like that. But whatever, Gus is jealous. I mean, even Gus, look, what were you doing at 19? Like, at 21, you were on Floribama Shore making an ass of yourself. Can you imagine if at that point you had a 2-year-old kid? Like, can you imagine if you had a kid at 19 and had to raise your child with, like, this show as your legacy? It would not be a good scene. Candace is living with her parents. She started a skincare line during the pandemic, which began selling hand sanitizers and has kind of grown into lotions and things like that called Yaganics. And her parents are now working for her, which is fun. Cody bought a new house down the street from his parents in South Carolina. Amy started an OnlyFans, and she is selling pictures of her feet and also her used socks and her foot shavings. Yeah, you heard that right. She gets pedicures, saves her dead foot skin, and people on the internet buy it. Now, this sounds like a disgusting thing, but also an untapped resource. I'm going to have to look into it. Stay tuned. Kirk is not really doing anything. His check-in scene is like him playing video games and FaceTiming his girlfriend. Like, okay. Jeremiah, who apparently is not talking to anybody else. I don't know if that's like intentional or if he just, you know, wants to keep his regular life separate from his work life of being on the show. But we get Candace saying that none of them talk to Jeremiah anymore. He is in Arizona with his asshole brother, Josh, who we met in past seasons, who looks like he maybe has herpes, allegedly, not confirmed, but big old sore on his lip. And Jeremiah won a bodybuilding competition right before lockdown in January of 2020. And now he doesn't have anything to do but work out in his garage and say bro a lot. So he's looking forward to potentially getting things back together and going back out with his classmates, with his roommates. And then finally, we get Nilsa, who is dating Gus, not that Gus, not our Gus, a different Gus. And we get this really sad story about her father, who it sounded like had some very strange accident where he fell and maybe had internal bleeding or something to that effect, because he went to the hospital and the doctors told her that there was not much they could do for him. And he ended up passing away in the middle of the pandemic, but not from COVID, which is very sad. And then we find out before they all leave to go to Montana, Nilsa discovers that she is pregnant. Yup, this girl who was hopping on every dick that she could find in Florida in past seasons and drinking until she literally was pissing her pants and screaming at pizza places that they needed to deliver to her, even though she didn't know her own address and couldn't give it to them. Yeah, that girl's gonna be a mom. And like, holy shit, this is part of what I find so entertaining about Floribama Shore, is that it's people that you only see at their worst. And like, clearly they're actual people, you know, like they're not 24/7 hot messes. But at the same time, it really comes across that way on the show. And again, going back to what I was saying about Gus and why, and him being jealous of his brother, like, can you imagine being Nilsa and having a baby and then like one, when your kid is old enough, being like, oh mommy, you know, you have a lot of followers on Facebook, how are you, or Instagram or whatever, how are you so famous? And then having to explain, I'm famous because I pissed my pants in the back of a taxi and then kicked out a window. Like, it blows my mind. It blows my mind. I don't understand it. Anyway, so then everyone ends up going to the house in Missoula, I think it was, which, by the way, this town, the state, it looks gorgeous. And I wish that Montana would get its shit together, because I would love to visit it, but I won't, because they're, you know, not the most LGBT friendly or left leaning state in the union. And they had the opportunity to elect a great senator in 2020, and they didn't do it. they reelected a turd. And I don't want to give them my money until they can get their shit together. But I will say, it looks like a beautiful place. And Candace and Amy realize they don't have cell service, so they can't use their GPS. So they're like, they printed out MapQuest directions, it looked like. And obviously Amy and is, you know, playing up the dumb blonde routine. So they get lost for a long time, and everyone else shows up to the house and can't get in because Amy's the one that made the reservation and didn't know, and, you know, hid the key or whatever, and they can't find the key. So like Gus tries to climb in the second story window, and they end up finding a cooler full of beer and just starting to drink. But Nilsa, because she's pregnant and hasn't told anyone yet, is like trying to hide it, and she's not doing the best job, but she's again with the embarrassing things to explain to your children. Instead of just saying, "Oh, I'm not drinking today," she's like, "I have diarrhea. I ate my fast food too quickly and now I want to shit my pants." Like, it's so insane. Amy and Candace eventually show up. Amy and Nilsa go to the bathroom and have a heart-to-heart where she tells Amy that she's pregnant. And they come up with this idea that Nilsa is going to pee on all of these pregnancy tests and then give them out to the group so that everyone gets one that says she's pregnant. Jeremiah shows up separately and it's awkward. And, you know, I mean, in the past, he's had issues with Gus because Gus lived with him and his brother. And Gus says that Jeremiah kicked him out. Jeremiah says that Gus was just being an asshole. I'm inclined to believe both of those stories because Gus is an asshole. And Jeremiah does, and his brother do seem like the kind of people who would just unceremoniously throw Gus out and not realize that that's what, you know, that was not the right thing to do. And then, you know, just the tension of him not really being a part of their conversations during the pandemic and not really keeping in touch, that everyone's kind of walking on eggshells with him. So it's awkward as soon as he walks in. And then Nilsa kind of tries to break the ice by telling everyone about the pregnancy. But before she does that, she thanks everyone for their kind words about, you know, her father and when he passed. And then Jeremiah very awkwardly gets up and goes over and hugs her and sits next to her. And it looks super socially awkward because like it looks like he's trying to steal her moment or show off or something. It's so weird. And I'm sure it's just some awkwardness because, again, he was homeschooled and he doesn't know how to act like a real person. But then she gives everyone the pregnancy tests. Gus has the funniest reaction where he's oscillating between saying like congratulations and being like, oh my god. So that was fun. And then of course it ends with Candace being like, wait, did you pee on this? And then everyone getting grossed out that they're holding Nilsa's pee in their hand. So that was the first episode of Flora Bama Shore. And again, this is such a trash show. Like, this is the epitome of trashy reality TV. Like, when people say the phrase guilty pleasure TV, they mean shows exactly like Flora Bama Shore. You turn it on to turn your brain off. And that is a beautiful thing, especially right now in the state of the world that we are living in. So next week they're back in their regular time slot, 8 o'clock on Thursdays, if you want to catch it. It's a lot of fun and I highly recommend. And also, full disclosure, I recorded this portion of the podcast on Saturday, which is the day after I got my second dose of the COVID vaccine. And like, I have a splitting headache and I slept for like maybe 3 hours. I'm not entirely sure any of this made sense. So hopefully it did. Wear a mask, get vaccinated. And coming up, recommendations for the week. It's going to be a busy week this week as we're getting a whole bunch of new shows and new seasons of shows. And it all starts on Monday, where we're getting the new season of The Voice on NBC, followed by the series premiere of Debris, which is a new sci-fi drama that was ordered a little late in the game. Then Bravo is giving us the new season of Below Deck Sailing Yacht, which, if you watched the first season, wasn't great, but it's a whole new crew, so I'm going to give the second season a shot. And then on Tuesday, we're getting season 7 of The Flash, which was cut short last year by COVID on the CW. Season 3 of New Amsterdam on NBC. And then ABC is giving us a new news series about Black life in America called Soul of a Nation. Wednesday, I'm personally excited because HGTV is releasing a new series starring Jonathan Knight from New Kids on the Block. And he was always my favorite for reasons that are now a little more obvious. Thursday is when Paramount Plus launches. And this is, again, like I said last week, the new version of CBS All Access. So they're relaunching as Paramount Plus. And with that, they are bringing two new series and also the new SpongeBob movie, which was supposed to come out in theaters last summer and was delayed. They're also launching a SpongeBob prequel animated series called Camp Coral. The first six episodes of that drop on Paramount Plus on Thursday, as well as Real World Homecoming New York, which is a reunion series of the original New York season of The Real World from the 90s. Friday, Amazon releases Coming to America, the sequel to Coming to America, starring Eddie Murphy. And then also Disney Plus is releasing Raya and the Last Dragon. And on Sunday, we get a huge interview on CBS between Oprah and Meghan and Harry, the season premiere of Married to Medicine on Bravo, the fourth season premiere of Good Girls on NBC, and the new season of The Great Food Truck Race on Food Network, which is set in Alaska, which sounds fun. And then as for finales, we're getting the season finale of Name That Tune on Fox, Celebrity Wheel of Fortune on ABC, and the final episode of WandaVision on Disney Plus drops on Friday. So hopefully we'll have some answers about what is actually going on there. So for my recommendation this week, I am recommending It's a Sin on HBO Max. The entire series released at once this month or in February, and it aired earlier this year in the UK, and it's really wonderful. It's funny and it's heartbreaking and it's wrenching and emotional, and I can't recommend it enough. It is written by Russell T. Davies, who originally wrote the British Queer as Folk. He also wrote Banana and Cucumber, which were companion series that aired on Logo originally and are now streaming on Amazon Prime. He has also worked on Doctor Who. He had a series a couple years ago called Years and Years that also aired on HBO that was very strange but kind of interesting. And he's a great writer. He writes really emotional and well-rounded, flawed but understandable characters, especially the queer characters and the gay men in particular that he writes, I always find very relatable. And the series It's a Sin tracks this group of friends from when they meet in the early 80s to when many of them pass away of HIV and AIDS by the end of the 1980s. And it stars Ollie Alexander, who is the lead singer of the band Years and Years, which is funny that his band is Years and Years and he's in a Russell T. Davies show who wrote a show called Years and Years. And it also stars Lydia West, who was in Years and Years. And it has some great cameos and guest appearances from Neil Patrick Harris and Stephen Fry. It has a star-making turn from Callum Scott Howells, who is a theater actor in New York, who is just wonderful, as Colin, who is from Wales. And just he has the most heartbreaking story in the whole series, I think. And it reminded me a lot of The Normal Heart, which was also about a similar time period, but took place in New York rather than in London, as It's a Sin does. But it really tells these stories that in many ways have been lost to time, because, you know, now in 2020, 2021, HIV/AIDS is not the death sentence at all that it was in the 80s and 90s. We have PrEP, we have PEP, we have drugs that can make people undetectable, which means that they cannot spread HIV/AIDS then. We have more knowledge now, obviously. And it's all of these things that I think younger people, especially younger queer people, take for granted, because not only do they not understand this because they haven't lived through it. I mean, I'm in my early 30s and I didn't even have to live through this. Like, I know quite a few people who are living with HIV who maybe contracted it early on, but also contracted at a time when there was some kind of treatment available like AZT. So, you know, they're living healthy, normal lives now in their 50s, 60s, 70s. And so people even younger than me probably don't even know anyone who has HIV or who contracted HIV at a time where it meant that you were going to die, and you were going to die alone, and you were going to die a shame to your family. And that is why I think stories like It's a Sin and The Normal Heart are so important, is because as gay people, we lost an entire generation of mentors, of artists, of fathers, brothers, lovers, an entire generation of gay men succumbed to a plague, succumbed to a pandemic that many people still to this day will not acknowledge. And it was all at the behest of the government. It took years for Reagan to even say AIDS. And stories like It's a Sin are necessary to remind us of what happened, to remind us of our progress, and also to remember and tell these stories that are so often forgotten or pushed to the side or overlooked simply because they're queer stories. And it's truly a beautiful series. It is so well made. It's so well written. It's creatively shot. It's stunning to look at. It has some great music, obviously, because it takes place in the 80s. And it's just, it oscillates so perfectly between being emotional and being fun. And it somehow is both hopeful and completely devastating. So that is my recommendation for the week. It's a Sin, now streaming on HBO Max. Okay, that does it for this episode of Fake TV Critic. Thank you all for tuning in. I will see you back here next week. Have a good one, everyone.